Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Lauren Workbank, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim O. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures down 4. NASDAQ Futures down 35. We have Greg Pappas in the studio. We should have Mr. Kevin O'Neill calling in a little bit for some of the sports stuff. We got a takeover in Syria. We've got all the sports things. We have the labor numbers of Friday. Is there anything else we can talk about, Greg?
Old Bitcoin versus Fartcoin spread.
Yeah, the old Bitcoin versus something spread. We don't know.
Yeah.
Our,
Bitcoin's down, Fartcoin's up.
Well, it's the whole idea of something that's worth nothing trading $100,000 kind of fuddles me, but it's been fuddling me for a while. What can I tell you?
Yeah, Fartcoin is,
what is that?
28 cents tonight or today.
What is it?
It's just another coin.
Ah, just another coin. Not like a quarter or half dollar or anything, just another coin.
Yeah, I guess starting to get scared. You know, can't buy Fartcoin if Bitcoin keeps going down, but
what am I doing? I have a roll
hanging
of,
in there.
I have a roll of dollar coins. What am I supposed to do with those things?
Dollar coins?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's find some vending machines.
You think they take the bucks? Can you go to the bank and you want those? They give them to you?
I don't know. Fartcoin is 28 cents, though. It's got a market cap of over $250 million. So,
what do you make of the? Where do you want to start? I want to talk a little bit with Mr. Flanagan about some things that he and I talked about over the weekend. These labor numbers have me very confused, even after talking to Carl, and I was going to bring it Kevin's.
I know the interest rate guys in the office are not really, they weren't pleased about last week. Nothing really moved the market, so they were sitting on their hands a bunch.
Well, that's what do you think about Dick Allen making the Hall of Fame, finally, after he's dead?
Salute.
Yeah, why do we wait till the guys are dead before? We did the same thing with Ron Santo.
Yeah, he probably would have liked to, yeah.
Now, and Rick Rushel is probably the most deserving pitcher that's not in the Hall of Fame. It's because he was heavy, they won't put him in or what?
Is that a subconscious bias, or what's it called? They're just prejudice?
I guess. I can't wait to talk to Lou on Thursday. Of course, we have all kinds. Lou is kind enough, and I can actually read this one of the other guys. Man, what's going on in Syria, who all the different players are. It's really something. Evidently, Assad's in Moscow now, right?
Yeah. Took off. And they denied it long enough to get him out of there, and then
I heard something the other day where he reached out to the U.S. for help, and as soon as I heard that, I knew he was gone.
Yeah,
I didn't know what to do. I knew he was toast when that happened. But the real losers in this are Iran and Russia. Huh?
They've dedicated a lot of time, energy, money, everything to keeping their influence in that sphere. I think the bigger loser would probably be Iran, because now Hezbollah and Syria and their tentacles, if you will, have all been kind of chopped short. So,
well, is anybody
mostly
gonna
due to Israel?
Is anybody going to give? I was one of the people who wasn't all that happy with the way Israelis were chopping up Gaza. But in terms of world history, the unyielding support that this administration has given to the Israelis, is that responsible for Hezbollah down, Hamas down, and now this guy down?
Well, it definitely hasn't hurt.
Yeah. Is somebody, so are any of the people on the right going to give them any credit for that? I think not.
On the right? On the left?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody can say this happened during Biden's watch, and I'm not saying he was a major domo behind it, but are they going to take credit for all this stuff?
They're going to try.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
That's a...
Well, you know, somehow, somewhere along the line, truth means something. I guess I'm, you know, too old. I must admit, it's a whole different world. Hey, I got a good
truth
one for
you.
Truth
is what you believe.
I got a good one for you. It brought tears to my eyes. There I was, minding my own business, driving out to get a haircut on Saturday morning early. For those that wonder why the hell I would drive that far to get a haircut. As you know, Greg, I'm a loyal dude, and the guy used to be down here in the CBOE building, and I got my hair cut from the guy for how many years. And when the CBOE building shut down, he essentially had to go to the western suburbs where he is. But he sees me on like 7:30 on a Saturday morning, and you get back and forth real quick. So, of course, you're going out there, and you have your obligatory idiots driving by you at 100 miles an hour, right? So one guy comes flying around me in his Lincoln, really nice-looking Lincoln SUV. It's a big thing. So he flies around me, and there's a big semi in the second lane from the right. Not in the right lane, but in the second lane. And the guy's right behind. He speeds up right behind this truck. Now, of course, if you know how to drive, if you have any brain whatsoever, you realize that if you can't see the mirror on the truck can't see you, right?
Were you doing Fast and the Furious stuff?
Going no, I'm just saying.
Under the trucks?
No, the guy comes, he's flying up right behind the truck, but now he's decided he's going to go around the truck on the right. But you never see guys like
that. I think they love that.
Yeah, have you ever seen the NASCAR or something where you're drafting behind the guy?
Yeah.
And then you hit the gas and you start going so fast and you fly around him. You don't just go around him, right? You fly around him. So the guy heads off to the right to fly around the guy just as the truck decides to move over a lane.
Uh-oh.
The guy slams on the brakes, hits the shoulder. I thought for sure he'd go up the embankment, but he saved it. All kinds of dust from the dusty-ass shoulder where the salt was, flying in the air. The guy manages to save it, doesn't, you know. And so there he is on the shoulder. Then he comes back in the lane. I'm going to say he behaved for a quarter mile. While he gathered his breath and wherever else he might have let go in the back of his pants, and he gathered everything together, and then immediately sped off again at 100 miles an hour. It took him about a quarter mile to recover, maybe 15 seconds.
Wow.
Then right off again. You'd think they'd sit there and go, there for the grace of God, I almost killed myself. Maybe I should act like I'm a normal human being. Not at all.
No?
Not at all.
Nah. You got a solid 15 seconds.
Yeah, I got a solid 15 seconds religion. Of somewhat normal behavior. And I was like, okay, then there you go.
What were you doing?
I'm just watching the whole thing. I was just driving along my own, where people are supposed to be driving.
Maybe we should get you a dash cam.
Kevin, are you with us? Matt, Kevin says he's with us.
Not yet.
If I could have, he says he's in Zoom. He's connected and my sound checks
Kevin
out.
Kevin, again?
What?
Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah, try it again.
I can hear you, man.
All right, there you are.
I was talking about...
I've been yelling all kinds of crap at you for the last 10 minutes.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I think what we could do in society... You know, this is just me being observant. I try to be observant, a cub reporter for Stocks and Jacks. What you need is some older dude in a pickup, just like me, with some cameras, and going maybe 5-8 miles an hour over the speed limit. With something that says if somebody flies by me, I know it's 100 miles an hour, and ahead of me, because I can never catch the guy, like two squad cars to pull him over. If we did that, like every day for about 4 or 5 hours, we could get all these idiots off the road. But we don't do anything like that, do we? Do we have any imagination whatsoever, other than put in more cameras to get people that we don't even see? I mean,
because given people, you know, when you have people who have no intention of following the law, and then if you use cameras to give them tickets, guess what? They have no intention of following the law of paying that fine either.
Well, when I years ago, I did a seminar for the CBOE in Toronto, right? So somehow or another, I land, and there was a bunch of people, so I rented a big car, brought everybody to the seminar. And you drive into Toronto, and on the expressway, it says, you know, it's all in kilometers. So I don't know what the hell those are, but let's say speed limit 60, over 70, $100, over 80, $300, over 90, car impounded. Simple as that. They just do it.
I mean, it works for me.
I mean, as long as you tell people, and it's right out there for everybody. If you can't read, you know what? If you can't read, you shouldn't be driving. Sorry, just me. Hey, speaking of which, what in God's name? Let's touch on this for a second, because our buddy Dr. Blade is actually going to call in one of these days and talk about this. This thing with the CEO in United Healthcare is fascinating to me on all kinds of levels, Kevin. How many people do we have working on this guy's murder versus a normal murder? Is it 100 times?
Tells you who. It tells you that the capability to investigate murders is there. It's a matter of having the will to investigate them.
So why do we just nobody else's? We don't seem to care. What I know that we have a weekend with 10 murders. We don't have the capability of doing what we're doing for this guy. Why don't we take one out of the 10 or something?
Then string them up in the town square, you know, have the hanging in the town square, and you know, try and have some deterrent value out of it.
Yeah, I don't understand what the hell we're doing in this whole mess. But hey, while we got you, we're talking to talk some sports. I'm going to some of this with Mr. Flanagan. Finally, Dick Allen, do we have to wait till people are dead now to let them in?
Apparently, we do. It depends on how much we like them.
Well, Dick Allen was not a fan of the media. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, and you know, to a certain extent, it was self-inflicted. He had his share of bad relationships with media, and a lot of ball players don't feel necessarily like it's their job to cultivate relationships with media. You know, Ted Williams had all kinds of issues with local media. So, he was way too good to be left out of the Hall of Fame. But there were a lot of people who wouldn't vote for him. So yes, you run into that. I will say this about Dick Allen: he hit the hardest ball I've ever seen. I was sitting in the lower grandstand in left field in Comiskey Park, and he hit this line drive that, sitting in maybe the first couple of rows of the grandstand, that I looked at it and said, that has a chance. That thing's going to come to me. It's coming right at me. And then it kept going up and up and up and landed in the upper deck. And it was, you know, that Bugs Bunny cartoon where the ball, you know, hits a screamer and the ball is actually screaming. I'm pretty sure that ball was screaming.
Well, he had massive arms, and he had, the bat was, his bat was like 4 or 5 ounces heavier than people use now, right? And he had almost like a Babe Ruth kind of bat.
Yeah, he had a very heavy bat, and incredibly strong, and incredibly gifted.
Seven-time All-Star.
And yet, you know, he could be a difficult guy to manage, difficult guy to play with sometimes. So, you know, kind of a complicated figure, but boy, what a great ball player he was.
I have sort of a half-assed Dick Allen story. I was a senior, so you would have been only a sophomore, and I worked every year at the school board on spring break. So my senior year, I said, you know, I don't know if they had anything for me anyway, but I decided to go to Florida. So I got to Florida with Billy Hake and all those guys, and of course we stay in some, you know, motel with 8 people in a room and that kind of thing that you did in college, and so we go to a spring training game. The Baltimore Orioles was their home place. I don't know who they were playing, but it's hotter than hinges of hell, right? And we're sitting, of course, we got like second row seats or first row seats right near the dugout. We're having a few beers, but even so, it was like sitting high. You almost didn't want to drink the beers. And the Orioles, even though they had Mark Belanger, and who was their second baseman? It was like one of the best shortstop.
Was it Bobby Grich days then?
Might have been, but they couldn't, I don't know if they were hungover, Kevin, or what. They couldn't catch a ground ball. I mean, there were like 2 hop double play balls of Belanger. He was just missing. The guy must have had a really good night before. The score is like 19-1 in the 5th inning. So this big black guy's playing left field. I think it might have been Don Baylor, but I'm not sure. One of those guys that, you know, and he's playing left field, and he's just standing out there. Like every inning was a half hour because they couldn't catch the ball. And he's sweating. He's dying, right? This is the year where Richie Allen decided he didn't need to be at spring training 6 weeks, which he didn't. He said, I need to be there 2 weeks, get my stroke, and I don't need to be standing out in the outfield for 6 weeks down there. And his press was all over about how he's making this money, doesn't even have a spring training, and blah, blah, blah. So this guy is out in left field. He comes in, and he passes us on the way to the dugout. And we had just gotten a round of beers, and Billy Hicks standing there. He goes, hey, how hot is it out there? And he goes, I'll show you. Could I have a swig? He downs the whole beer, right? And he goes, I'll take care of you guys. He goes into the dugout, and sure enough, like 2 minutes later, the beer vendor comes and gives us all a new beer. Everybody got a free one, not just Billy. He goes, it's brutal out there. I haven't even gotten a ball. I'm standing out there in this heat. I'm thinking, there's no way that helped the guy come July, wherever he would be playing.
So I think, you know, if you wanted to sum up his personality, I wouldn't say he's a bad guy. You know, he didn't do bad things to people or anything like that. Just kind of prickly, you know.
Yeah, well, Steve Carlton was the same way.
Oh, Steve Carlton was the same. There's lots of guys who are like that, and that, you know, it's fine. But you know, we tend to castigate those people probably more than we should. And that probably as much as anything is why he didn't get into the Hall of Fame while he was alive, and while people were voting, while he was eligible for the typical path, is because a lot of people held that against him. And as the time fades and people are on the Veterans Committee who didn't see him play and don't know anything except they're looking at his numbers and saying, my God, why isn't this guy in? There we go.
Well, he never was a hot shot on defense. He's probably average at best.
Yeah.
Why? What is Rick Rushel doesn't get in because he's fat or what?
Yeah, I was going to say, has anybody shaped like him ever gotten into the Hall of Fame? And then there was this Ruth guy who did. So
it was later in his career when he got a little heavier. But plus, he didn't look good in those old uniforms either.
Yeah.
Hey, my question to you is, you know, now that you're above the toll road, so you're not in the South. What exactly is the definition of targeting in the South? Do you have to decapitate the guy totally, or what?
Targeting is determined based on who the referees really want to win.
Appears so. Explain what happened in the Georgia game, or the Texas Georgia game.
You explain it because I'm not remembering the play.
Well,
that I could have been dozing off. Then.
Well, they're in overtime.
I saw the replay, but I'm not sure where it fit into the flow of the game.
But it they're in overtime, right? So Georgia comes down and Texas comes down and kicks a field goal, so they're up by three. Well, Georgia's driving now. Their quarterback had gotten knocked out in the last play of the first half, where somebody comes in and he tried to throw a pass, and the guy just nails him on his arm.
Yeah, right. So his arm's just kind of hanging.
He's kind of hanging. His elbow's messed up. I mean, you know, he doesn't look like he needed a new elbow or anything, but it looked like he couldn't pass or anything. So he's on the sideline. So they bring this other guy in named Gunner something, who's, of course, being a gunner, he's a 5-star recruit. And the kid is playing basically out of his ass. He's playing great. He's running. He's fearless. So now George is marching down for like a touchdown. When they get a touchdown, they win, right? So they get down. The guy runs the ball. He gets to about the 3-yard line. Somebody tackles him. He's got him totally in the grasp. Some other dude takes a run and nails him right in the head. His helmet goes flying about 10 yards away. And I'm sitting there going, they got to call that one. Sure enough, they get the rules guy on there. I don't know if that was targeting. The refs come back. We've decided no target. Well, not only that, since his helmet came off, he's got to leave the game for a play. How the guy didn't have a concussion, or maybe he did, I have no idea. But he has to leave the game for a play, even though he's driving his team down there, and they knocked his helmet off. He didn't take it off the moon for the camera. So he has to leave. They bring the other guy in with the one arm. He gets the ball from center and hands off to the halfback, and the guy scores. I was really happy to see a team score in my life, Kevin.
Well, I'm, when it comes to the SEC, I neither get happy nor unhappy. I have respect for teams. I will tell you that as far as I'm concerned, Georgia is in as a top 4 seed because they won their conference. and I just their last few weeks have been pathetic. So, and the Texas game, you know, Texas had 250 yards of offense in the first half and 6 points. They couldn't get out of their own way.
Right.
They should have been up 21 points at halftime, and the, you know, the game probably would have gone their way.
Well, before you give us your assessment of where everybody lands here, with if everybody doesn't know, Boise State and Arizona State ended up with byes, which put a lot of teams, most people think, better than them further down. But two things. One is, did you see the end of the Saints-Giants game just by random chance?
I did.
Do you believe that play the guy made on the on a extra part of field goal?
Oh yeah, I do. I'm surprised it wasn't against the Bears. You know,
well, but, for those that didn't
watch, the defensive lineman hurdles the blocker, and it lands on his feet, and then blocks the kick, blocks the field goal.
The guy is just kind of this big, certainly not slender dude.
Oh, he's 300 pounds if he's five, you know. So
you remember the films back in the day of the fridge, William Refrigerator Perry, you know, looked like a big fatso. But the guy, they would show pictures of him. They put a table 3 feet up, and the guy could, from a standing jump up onto the table. That's essentially what this guy did. The offensive lineman fired out low. The guy, he didn't have a running start like he was a high jumper. On both feet, the guy jumps up. The guy goes under him. He lands behind the guy, right in front of the kicker, and blocks it. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. Also, let's do indicate that it was a terrible job by the blocker.
Oh yeah. Well, he totally whiffed.
He totally whiffed by keep putting his head down instead of staying up. You're not supposed to stand up. That's what happened when the Bears got their field goal blocked by the in Green Bay. That was prior, but you don't stand straight up either, but you do have to engage your guy. You can't just kind of dive for his ankles and hope to God you chop him.
You think the Bears could bring Eberflus back to call the defensive signals?
No kidding, huh?
I mean, he that's what he did, right? He called the defense. The defense was good. The defense was horrible yesterday.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about the Bears. They were so bad yesterday.
Hey, I would like your reflection. One more question before we get to so the Irish are playing on Friday night. That's wild. The other one was I was talking to my cousin from Columbus, and who's his wife, my cousin-in-law, has been involved in has taught school, and she's one of these ladies that not only is pleasant as all get out, but she's a brilliant math teacher and has taught people for literally 50 years in that area. Has an absolute photographic memory of all the kids and all their parents. And the kids just love her. And a lot of these kids go to Ohio State, and they all, you know, talk to her. One of the punters used to call her every morning, tell her how nervous he is now. Oh, just focus, just like you did in math. Just focus.
But everybody needs a sports psychologist.
Oh, yeah, and she's like everybody's psychologist. Well, evidently there's a guy playing for Ohio State that is, I guess he's a linebacker and he hasn't played. He's 6'3", 240, can run like, one of those kind of guys. But he hasn't been in a game yet. He's only a sophomore. Now he's been making $70,000 a year. Now, he's in the portal and he's gone. He's not even going to show up for the thing. Now, the people that are in the portal, they can't play in these playoffs, can they, Kevin?
Absolutely not. No, you cannot play for two teams in the same season. And even if this guy hasn't gotten into a game, and he probably has because they've had some mop-up games, so he may very well have gotten in, in some mop-up time. Because you also have to remember that the eligibility rules is if you don't if you play four games or less, you have not used your eligibility. So there are a lot of people who sort of judiciously use a freshman or a young guy's playing time, where they might get him some playing time early, or they might hold him out, and then you get to the end of the season, and I need somebody to be able to play in the last game of the season or a playoff game, and they're still not burning their eligibility. Now, I always say if a guy's really all that good, he's not going to come back for a fifth year anyway unless he's recovering from an injury or something. He's going to go to the NFL or the NBA or wherever. You're not going to get guys for fifth year typically. But but you'll get some very average players for 5 years that that can fill out your team. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, you cannot play for two teams.
If you decide you're leaving a place, you have to be in the portal now so you can be signed up for the January quarter, right? You can't be in the portal and play in a bowl game.
Right, because it depends on when it is. It depends on when your school starts its quarter or its semester, depending on which rotation they're on. If you want to get started academically to make sure that you're eligible, it is time either now or pretty darn soon for you to get in there. So, a lot of schools will start like in mid-January. So you would probably want to be settled in mid-January.
So are you willing to make the statement that not one of the guys on the Notre Dame football team is in the portal that everybody's going to play?
I don't know of anybody that's in the portal. I have not seen news of anybody in the portal. That doesn't mean there aren't any. It just means
You're in the portal, I think you can, as long as you haven't committed or transferred, I think you could play.
I think once you're in there, you're gone.
That's true. I don't think that's true. I think once you do that, you're gone. And the only way that you can, because there are guys that put their name into the
portal. But that doesn't mean you've gone somewhere.
Right. But there are guys that put their name in, but the only reason they can come back once they put their name in is with their school's blessing. So you have to then remove your name from the portal, and your school has to accept you back.
Yeah,
it's pretty final, Greg.
Yeah, if they want you though, what are they going to? They're not going to say no to one of their best players.
Only a couple people have ever come back.
They're not. But then he's out of the portal.
Yeah, well, if you're in there, you can't play.
What would stop you from? What would stop you from going back if there was no interest, or if you got some?
You blew it. You gave up your scholarship. Kevin's been talking for 3 years. How many guys probably went in the portal and blew their scholarship, never got another offer?
Huh?
Can you imagine if your kid had a ride somewhere and he puts his name in the portal and then he comes back and says, "Hey, Pops, I blew my scholarship. You better start paying." That'd be a great conversation.
Yeah, it would be. No, there are some of those guys, they just don't get a D1 offer, and they might go to a Division II school. They'll get partial. They might get partial tuition, something like that. It depends. It depends on what they want out of it. Because, look, if you put yourself in an athlete's shoes, what do they want? Well, when you're playing college football, you really want to play on a good team. You want to have a chance to develop and develop for the NFL. If you have that kind of talent, you want a coaching staff who's going to develop you. You want to play in the big games and do all of that, but you want to compete at the highest level possible for as long as you can. And for some guys, they get into a major level school and they find out that they're not going to get to compete at that highest level possible, and that their highest level possible may be a lower level school, a 1AA school, might even be a Division II school. And I think that's fine, because how long are you going to get to play college football?
Sometimes it works.
Be on the field.
Well, sometimes the coaches just don't recognize your talent, or somebody really good at it. Cousin was telling me about this kid from he told me to school, but I, of course, brain farted it. I don't remember where he came from. He transferred to Syracuse, and he led the country in passing last year, and he didn't even play any other place. Who's that?
Well, and that happens. Joe Burrow, when he left Ohio State and went to LSU, because he was behind some pretty good quarterbacks at the time.
All right, Kevin, a little bit on the playoffs, and then we got to talk about these employment numbers and what you're seeing. I've never seen anything like this in these employment numbers, but tell me about the playoffs. You think it's ended up being okay here, or what?
Oh, I think it'll be okay. I told you a few weeks ago that I would be concerned about selling out stadiums at some places, and at Notre Dame being one of them, because they rely so much on people who are. Again, it's a night game. How many day trippers are you going to get who are going to come in for a night game? They're not going to get home till 4 a.m. From Chicago or someplace like that. People traveling weekends on fairly short notice during the holidays, that's going to be a tough sell too. You'll get a lot, but you may not fill the stadium. Unless, of course, you're playing Indiana, in which case there will be plenty of Indiana fans who will be happy to go to that game. So so I think that game should have good atmosphere. I don't really intend to go to the game because I think it's going to be pretty cold and uncomfortable, and I would much rather watch it from the comfort of my living room. But I am thinking I'm going to go over to campus that afternoon and do, you know, just kind of walk around and check out the atmosphere.
Well, how many people, if you got a decent seat and you bring a family of four, it's easily a $2,000 event.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. And how many people have a day a week before Christmas that, I mean, people have schedules, especially if you have kids. How many people can free that up? I mean, I don't know. I mean, people, you know, some of the old farts that I know, they go to these games, they plan them like a year in advance. They've got their hotel room, they've got everything. I mean, they got the gas
station. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I said it's going to be hard to get people there who are the one, you know, they rely on the people making the annual pilgrimage. It's different at Ohio State. You can fill it up in Columbus. It's right in the middle of the state. Hardcore Ohio State fans throughout the state. And you can do it, especially if it's a day game. You can get a lot of day trippers there. That's not a problem. But everybody's got a different market, and Notre Dame's market has a lot of people traveling. There's hotels and restaurants in South Bend and in the area that probably wouldn't exist but for those football games and their ability to sell
for
very
weekend.
Large dollar amounts to sell their rooms with, you know, a crappy room at a Motel 6 that's getting $250 a night plus and a two-night minimum, or even a three-night minimum in some cases.
What I'm not disappointed they're playing Indiana, but I for a team that was allegedly ranked third or fourth to not play one of the Patsies in the second game, I think is a little rude.
Well, I don't know that there are any Patsies.
I would have rather played.
Yeah, because they wound up fifth ranked in the rankings. So their final rankings were Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame. Well, so you know Texas wasn't going to get in the top four because only one of Texas and Georgia is getting in there. Those four spots are reserved for conference champions. Same thing with Penn State, Oregon, Penn State. Only one of those was getting in there. So immediately, those two teams bumped down to 5 and 6 in the seedings for the tournament, which put the Irish at 7.
Well,
how it worked.
For those who aren't counting these useless conference championships now, which I really believe they are, the team who loses that and goes on in the playoffs, like the Texas, who did Clemson lose to? SMU? Or they beat SMU? For those teams,
they beat SMU, so yeah, SMU got knocked.
If they were going to make it to the final game of the playoffs, they have to play 5 really high-end games after their 12-game season. 5 of them. That's more than the pros, for God's sake. What are we doing here? Is anybody but me or you think these conference championships now are useless?
Oh, I absolutely think they're useless, let me put it this way. They're not useless in terms of being money makers. That may change over time as people start to realize that, you know, it's not really that the playoffs is everything. You know, imagine where the remaining bowl games are going to be this year and how interested people are going to be in those. The answer is not a bit. So those will fall by the wayside. But I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the conference championships fall by the wayside simply because, you know, what you're doing is you're not, in a football sense, if you're just looking at the football, it really doesn't do much. Probably the only one that got in because of the conference championship games that wouldn't have gotten in otherwise is Clemson.
Arizona State,
and
maybe.
And they're in as the last seed. They're in as the number 12. Interestingly, the team they beat to get there, SMU, is 11. So that's, you know, the ACC got two teams.
Well, what about Arizona State?
They got the two lowest seeds.
You're saying Arizona State would have got in anyway? I don't think they were ranked top 12.
Well, that's true. Arizona State and Iowa State was either or.
Yeah.
So the conference wasn't going to get any extra teams in there. So they were actually playing for the spot. So, yeah, so I'll give it that. That, you know, a couple of them made sense. But Oregon and Penn State, they were both getting in no matter what the outcome.
Now how does
and that was known ahead of time. Probably the same thing for Georgia. If anything, these playoffs probably cost the SEC a team.
Well, all right. Do we have Mr. Flanagan? Is he hanging around in the room? Do we have Jan?
I'm here, Tom.
I don't know how long you've been there, but I want you, Kevin, you're on this, and we're going to let Kevin go and talk about the Nixon numbers and talk about the murder and how many people are chasing the dude. Carl gave the numbers, you know, his usual really good stuff on Friday. In this establishment survey, we went back from 12,000, which is a total clunker month, up to 200 and some. Now, how we go from, you know, 10,000 people a day to 500 a day to 10,000 again in hiring, I mean, I have no concept in my mind how that even can happen. But let's say it does. But we've been averaging, what'd you guys say, 175 on the establishment survey month after month? Somewhere in there, 150 to 200, even though we had the one clunker month. I think I'm pretty close there. But I was looking, I was actually stunned on the household survey here on Friday. I just like your guys' take on it, maybe yours more, Kevin, because in November of 2023, the household survey showed 161,866 employed. Now we've got 161,141, so that's 750 lower, 710 lower. Contrast that with essentially 2.5 million hired on the establishment survey. Now, if both of these aren't lying, or if they're halfway decent surveys, the only explanation is we've got 3.5 million people working two jobs, more than the year before. Is that possible? And how is it positive?
Oh, it's definitely possible. And you know, Kevin or Carl alluded to this Friday that, you know, there seems to be a massive drop in numbers of people. These are not new people. I mean, these numbers can't correspond to, I think, stable numbers in the demographics. I think that there's been a real drop off in the population, at least the working population. And there's various websites. So Ed Dowd started the whole study, you know, a year or so ago, more than that, about, you know, how people were dying at a, you know, increased rate, mortality numbers were, you know, askew from any kind of stable numbers ever since the pandemic. And I think you add that to the mix, and I think it's entirely conceivable that, you know, you've got a fogging now between the number of people out there and the number of jobs any of those living people are working, and it ends up with making some really screwed up job numbers.
Well, the population is only up, the working people available for work is only up a million people, 1.3 million in a year. That's really light.
Yeah, and
I would also chime in that it is entirely possible that we saw a big spike in that in November because of holiday employees.
I'm talking about just people who are over 16 available to work.
No. I'm shifting back to the number of jobs, the number of two jobs people. So you every year we see a certain number of people who say, yeah, I'm going to take a side hustle, you know, either delivering for Amazon, working in an Amazon distribution center, working at the mall, working at the wherever, and there's always a lot of those.
I just, for me, it's a matter of degree. When you cheer so say 50,000 out of the, or 100,000 out of the 2 million last year that we thought got a job, 100,000 or 200,000 of those were somebody got a part-time hustle. I guess they don't have a problem with it, Kevin, but and Jan. But when the one number is like 2 million something, and the other one's actually down, that's a whole different message, I think, isn't it? Or is it just me?
No, it's a whole different message. But you know, there's been a real shift in people's thinking among employers and employees about, you know, what full-time employment really means, what, you know, when benefits packages have changed so drastically over the last 10, 20 years, and you cut people's hours, you know, and you make them like it pretty much. Your only alternative, if you can't get any more hours at the place you're working at, is to get another job and get what hours that employer will give you. So you've got people cobbling together work histories now, and it's all, you know, I think it's epidemic in every level. It's not just in low-end entry-level jobs. I think it's throughout the system. People who are self-employed, you know, are cobbling together other gigs just to make ends meet, whether it's Uber or Lyft or DoorDash or something else. This stuff is just, you know, overwhelming, I think, in its ubiquity. So I'm kind of, you know, it's discouraging to think that this is how people expect to ever get ahead. It isn't like you can build a
career. Well, none of these jobs are going to pay anything.
No, that's the thing. But people can't walk away from any of them. What they're really trying to do is to add more to them to their portfolio. This is a lose-lose situation, ultimately. There's only so many working hours in the day, and only so many jobs you can physically do in order to think you're getting by. And of course, maybe that's the big illusion of all. You're not getting by at all. You're just falling farther behind.
Well, in a year where you have 700...
To pile on to what John just said is, and Carl kind of, you know, talked through this, I think, on Friday too, is when you start to see people dropping out altogether, it's because now I've done everything. I've got my job, my hours got cut, I took a second job, I'm still not getting ahead, I'm still not making ends meet. You know, oh, screw it.
Yeah, it's the, you know, ultimate fatigue factor, I think.
Well, I mean, just if you look at these numbers are so sobering. I said 700,000 less people working, 900,000 more unemployed, which I guess are still looking for work according to the numbers. Who knows if they really are? And 1,000,004 in the we don't know what the hell they're doing column. And this is the number that I look at. As you look at budget deficits and, you know, we're changing administrations and everybody's got, some people have a savior coming in or a savior going out or whatever you want to feel about these people. Tell you what, I don't want to be walking into the Oval Office when the participation rate is under 60%. There's no way that 100% of the people can be paid for by 59.8% of the people working. I'm sorry, that number needs to be 63, 64 minimum for the budget to get back in shape, for Chicago to not be putting up, find out all kinds of crazy ways to tax people. You don't get that number up. I don't care how righty or lefty you are, we got a problem. Or where am I wrong here?
Well, on the other hand, though, when you do take over, when some things are really bad, you don't even have to do really, really well to be a hero.
Yeah.
Take my word for it, I've taken over some pretty bad departments or divisions, and you know, you can be a hero really fast just by fixing a few things.
Well, so, but if you start, we know
there's a ticking time bomb out there, so you know it's going to be really hard to even fix a few things. But the time is coming.
Well, if the administration, and by the way, I'm totally agreeing with everything you guys know. I mean, you guys will never agree with anything on the other side, but I can agree with a lot of stuff on your side. When this guy Rashwamy or whatever he says,
we really got to work on that.
I know. Why can't I get that?
Rashwamy, as if he's like a Jewish Indian guy.
I don't know why I can't get the guy's name right. But
Ramaswamy.
Okay. I mean, if he's right, and we cut back on, you know, these hospitals got no business charging 70% overhead. You could never get me to disagree with the dude on that. I think the number like should be 30, but I guess I'd settle for 40 or 50. If we end up blowing people out of these, whatever you want to call these big hospitals now, you know, I'm going to say they're almost like a castle of some kind of where money just goes and never comes out. Let's say the people up top aren't going to take a cut in pay. So say we lob off 20% of the people that work at Northwestern, University of Chicago, and Rush. Okay. Now, we got 20 more percent of the people out there. Now, that's what needs to happen. Now, it won't be the right people, of course. And if we toss you know, 100,000 people out of Washington government, which hopefully they'll take the duplications out and not get rid of the good people. How does this 59.8 number go up and not down? I mean, there doesn't. I guess what I'm saying is, it used to be, or the economic theory is, if that were to happen, if a hospital got more efficient or the government got more efficient, and taxes went down, and your the money you paid to go into the hospital went down a little bit, that money is now more available to be spent somewhere else. And in an economy that is vibrant and competitive, it doesn't take that long for those people to find another job that is taking advantage of the fact that people now have more disposable income. I mean, that's the theory that I learned. But it seems to me, since we have these places that are so big, it's so hard. Who can put together a research facility? How soon? How could you get the money to put together a research facility that is more efficient than Northwestern? We don't want to stop the research, do we? We want somebody to do it more efficient. Who the hell is that somebody going to be? I
hope not the government.
No, but who's it going to be? How does somebody get the financing? How does somebody raise money through the stock market? All the ways that this used to normally work seem like, if you don't have your nose up the ass of government, you can't get anywhere. I don't see any entrepreneur doing that.
And I don't think it's going to start with research and medical, independent medical companies. I think where you're going to see the initial cuts are going to be in government themselves. Yeah. And so, that's still going to displace people that have to find something new to do. And that will be interesting to see how that shakes out. Because you could actually see a negative impact for, even if it's only temporary, you're going to see a negative impact.
Well, I don't, the ability to start a firm now, to me, is way worse than it's ever been in my lifetime.
If you cut loose a lot of government, a lot of workers from inefficient places, and simultaneously make it easier for people to get a firm up and running, then I think maybe you have the equation you need. But again, it's not going to be one to one every month.
But someplace somewhere, the management classes Eric always used to talk about. None of what any of these, neither administration, going back how many years, none of them has addressed essentially that problem. Everybody looks at it in terms of it's a shareholder thing. No, it isn't. The shareholders don't make any money at these places. Well, stocks go up, I guess, but the management, what's going to cause the management class at Northwestern University, to say, wait a minute, we're paid 10 times too much. I mean, I'm paid $10 million. What is that all about? I mean, or do we got to go the other way? These are tax efficient. Is it true, Jan, that Northwestern doesn't even pay their water bill?
They don't pay their property tax bill, so I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't pay their water bill either.
Well, but how does a place that can pay somebody that kind of money not pay taxes?
Well, institutions like educational institutions have really profited from this demonization of the private sector that reached its climax during COVID, where the government just became this sort of savior for everybody. It was making all the horrible regulations, but it was giving people cushy, stay-at-home jobs when nobody else could stay in business or even open their doors. And now we've got, a situation where places like Northwestern that were big to begin with have just gotten bigger because they've stepped into this void that can gobble up government money at a faster rate. And you've got a private sector that's completely, practically driven into the corners. There's no way they can compete.
How many tax-paying buildings and pieces of property have those people bought in the last 20 years and made them non-taxpaying? I mean, Brandon Johnson, as much as I can't stand the guy, how does he deal with that?
Well, there's not much he could do about it.
Well,
it's a huge number, Tom. And it's a lot of it is high-end properties in downtown Chicago and Choice Lakefront property. And, there's been an explosion in attempts to grow these educational institutions. DePaul, I think kind of overplayed its hand in a way, but it was doing the same thing. And they saw it as a way to survive. But what it's really done is change the whole tax structure for properties that formerly were, you know, chugging away with the businesses renting space, and the property taxes were being paid because these properties were not exempt. Now they're exempt in great numbers. So you've got a system that can't, you know, balance its books now because of this.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, I get the part where if somebody has a little church in the country, or where I went to grammar school, St. John Fisher had a square block with 1,600 kids going to school and a church and a parking lot. I get the part about non-taxation, but if all of a sudden St. John Fisher's charging $80,000 a year and the guy running the place is making $20 million and they got a football team making a gazillion dollars, I think the non-taxing of churches is getting a little too wild there, don't you?
Yeah, it's tilted in the wrong direction, certainly.
And I don't see how, as much as we make fun of our mayor, which we should, how would anybody want that job? How do those numbers ever add up?
Well, I don't know if he wanted the job, but other people behind him wanted him to have that job for their own selfish reasons. You know, pushing the public sector it front and center for everything and keeping its pension system intact when everybody else who doesn't have a pension has to foot the bill. So you know, I don't blame Brandon Johnson as much as the people who wanted him in that job.
I'm going to ask our fine producer, Matt Byrne. Matty, is there any chance that you could go back like 8 years of shows and replay the interview find the interview I had with the head of the Teachers Union Pension Fund?
Let's see if we can find that. Yeah.
It was spectacular, right?
I want to hear that, Tom, because you've referred to it a number of times.
Well, I've only had in the entire how many years I've been doing the show, I only had three really crappy interviews.
What was the name?
I have no idea what the guy's name was. That's why I'm putting it on you.
See what we can do with that, yeah.
Can you name the other two, Kevin? You've been listening to the show the whole way.
One was Stockman, wasn't
it? One was David Stockman, yeah. Yeah, he was terrible. The other was the guy that, what was her name? Kathy, got from the Finland guy who was in the Euro Parliament. Remember that guy?
Vaguely.
He came on right after Brexit, John.
I remember that we had him. I don't remember the interview.
He came on right after Brexit, and you know, Brexit, and he said something about the politicians in London were at fault because they just didn't tell their people how they should vote. I said, say what? Say what? Basically. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to educate these people on how they should vote. And I go, maybe they just didn't want to be in the union. Well, that's absurd. Why wouldn't they not want to? Like I should have said because of you, but I didn't. You know, that's a whole. John, how many people are in that group that are in? Where are they at? They're in Brussels, right? Their whole
the EU Parliament.
Well, yeah, aren't they like 400 people or something?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Blow.
So, I mean, the people in Britain didn't want to be governed by those people. Plus, they were dumb
who
enough.
Would?
To...
would God?
Didn't Lou say that the week before they came down with some ruling about how they were going to change how people had to make tea or something?
Oh, that's mild compared to some of the other crazy stuff we're doing and are doing.
What did Mr. Greg Pipeline, the dude we used to have on Monday to do their commodity stuff, Chris, said that there was like 75 pages of regulations regarding cabbage or something? I mean, it's unbelievable what they do over there. Anyway, those are my three worst interviews. That's not bad for 14 years, is it?
That's pretty good.
Well, yeah, the guy from the school board, the line I want Matt to dig out is, I said something about, well, you know, other people aren't getting their wages, aren't going up as fast, and they don't really have a pension. And, oh, by the way, the city's population is shrinking. And he said, I don't care what's happening. Our people deserve their money. I said, so what if there's only one guy left? And he goes, he better have enough dough. Or something along those lines.
Yeah, I've had conversations with teachers, you know, who, you know, have said, you know, here's what our demands are. This is what we should be earning. You know, Chicago public school teachers. When the question arises, well, where's the money going to come from to pay for those kind of wish list items? And the response a couple times has been, well, that's not our problem. You know, we don't care where it comes from. We just got to have it. This is the mindset now that's really been enshrined in these contract negotiations, and it ain't going in a good direction.
No, I have a cousin, well, my mother's cousin, who's only like 2 years older than me, in Columbus, and he was the head of the, what are the names of the guys that, the huge pumping facilities that actually pump the water from the lake, you know, through all the different neighborhoods of people's houses. If you look around, every once in a while you see some big building, you know, they're making, it's sounding like power's going on in there only because it is. Yeah. What do you call those guys? They're not plumbers. They're something.
Water management people.
Well, he was the head of that union for a long time. And he said, you know, we got a decent pension, but every time we had a thing with the city, I would assess whether the city had any money really to give us a raise. And we never got that big of a raise, but we have our pension, and everybody's happy. We never had a strike. I mean, he's a real good guy. And he goes, I've never not gotten along with one of the mayors. They were aware of our needs. We were aware of theirs. And it was always, you know, hunky-dory all along the way. I said, just be careful. Because when you go into a room 20 years from now and mention the word pension, you have to dig out an old dictionary because you're going to be the only guy in the room who even knows what that means. It's true, isn't it? I mean, it's unfortunate.
Oh, it is true. Hey, I'm going to have to let you guys go, so I will talk to you Wednesday, Tom and
okay.
John. Always nice to spend some time with you.
Make sure you get your ticket, Kevin. And I wouldn't want to see you in any seat other than the $250 seats.
I will get my ticket if I see both of you guys over here sitting in the seats next to me.
By the way, I did. I talked to our guys. As you know, we got guys.
We got guys,
and I think we might have an in, serious in, if we play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl.
I will be in Phoenix that day, and I'm going to the Fiesta Bowl.
Well, that's the wrong bowl.
Well, it's the bowl that I bought several months ago. So, I'm visiting my son and daughter-in-law, whom I haven't seen all year. So, I have seen my son, no, you guys have a good time at the Sugar Bowl. I won't be there.
So, John, if we get a skybox, are we in?
Yeah.
We have to be a skybox. I'm not sitting in a regular old seat. I'm just saying.
I'll sign you a note, Tom.
You're out? And even with a skybox, you're out? I don't know about you. Hey, what does it tell the world? Two things. This murder in New York, as horrible as it was, or is, I mean, what the amount of effort looking forward to find this person, when you think of all the murders that are happening around the country, what are we doing here? Now, does this mean every CEO at the board meeting next week is going to need 5 bodyguards?
I suspect so. I mean, that's how I would think if I were in this class of these people.
I don't get... I was at... when I was on the board of the SIBO, the most useless time you ever felt at a board meeting is if you have somebody come in, an outside firm, and there's all kinds of them, right? We'll do a security assessment of your building and tell you all the spots where. This is after, it was before 9/11, so I was there in the 90s, but something happened somewhere and we had this security assessment. And you get these guys to come in with this huge thing. Of course, they're going to do it for you. And they say, well, you know, you don't have any those concrete things by the street. Somebody could drive a car right through the door. And you go, okay, you just thought of that? Or, and oh, by the way, people would just take their trading jackets off because they had a place down there where they would store them for you. The next day, people just wing their jackets on the counter when they left. And the people who worked in there took your jacket, put it on your hanger. You know, everybody gave a tip at Christmas, and everybody's happy. Oh, do you realize that somebody could walk through there and grab one of those things and the next day use that access card? Of course, it had never happened, right, until these guys. And you name the stuff, and if you're a guy on the board by yourself, you listen to this and they go, so here's our budget, you know, like $4 million you guys got to give us to change all this. If you open your mouth and say, wait a minute, why would anybody drive through the front door? I mean, without, you know, because I'm always one of those things, if you can't protect everybody, you can't protect anybody. That's always been my thing, which maybe is all wrong. But if you want to say something like that, it's, you know, to get rid of a security guard or something. They look at you like you're from Mars. Like, if all of a sudden something happens and somebody finds out we fired a security guard, we're all going to be personally sued, and that'll never happen. So what is this going to say about Now, every one of these guys is going to feed four people walking with them down the block, or what? And what are we doing here?
That's the... I mean, it's like finding a weak spot in the system, creating it, whether it's security or, you know, cyber protection, whatever it may be. You find the weak spot, and then you can charge a gazillion dollars to protect everybody from that weak spot. But, you know, most of your energy has been directed towards finding these things and then providing the solution for them. So it's, you know, using a thief to catch a thief. But it's a racket, pure and simple to me. I don't... Unfortunately, I mean, there's such hostility with a high-profile person like Thompson at, you know, United Healthcare, and other people. You can fill in the blanks, and you'll find all sorts of people who stir up similar feelings because they seem to have way too much money and way too much power compared to any other standard you could possibly come up with. So that when these people, things happen, somebody gets killed on the street, this becomes a kind of, a symbol for, a Robin Hood mentality that other people easily buy into. And yeah, it's creepy at one level. It's disgusting too.
Why don't people at the upper end of our hate like hell to call politicians at the upper end of our society? Why don't people recognize, I'll lob a political thing in here. Why don't people recognize the Trump phenomenon? That everybody over the last few years has some incident in their life where they absolutely hate these people. Now, what they do about it, I don't know. I'll give you a story about PTI. It's so long ago, but still, it happened. We had and every firm, I mean, we were lucky we only had one, but every firm has had something like this happen to them, and big firms, it's happened to them probably multiple times, if you look at their record. We had somebody was able to abscond with some money out of somebody's account. But the person, I'm to this day, I'm convinced it was an inside job, because the guy had told us how he was going to take money out and send it to a couple of his sisters or something. All of a sudden, one day, we get the request for the checks. Came from his email and everything, from the whole bit. So we send these two checks out to these two ladies. And we managed to catch the third one, because we smelled the rat and we caught the third one. Well, one of the ladies, now, we just had our ongoing, all the stuff we do for regulatory people, anti-Monday money laundering. All the stuff we have to do, if you want to open up an account here, we have to check you out through Interpol, through every place. We've become a police force, essentially. We've been forced to. We have to do all this stuff. The police don't do anything. Even though your money's coming from a bank, we can't think that the bank did their job. We have to do it.
Right.
Or anything like that. Now, God help you, if you walk in here with $10,000 in cash, you're going to say, do something with it. put it in your bank account and send it over. We can't take it. So all of a sudden, one of the guys evidently had talked this older lady in Mississippi or Louisiana, and that he needed money. Money was going to come into her account, and she needed to send it to him in Egypt, right? So $45,000 goes in her account. I ended up with all her bank records and everything, because I pursued this like you expect me to. I pursued this. She never had more than $500-$800 in her bank account. Maybe when her Social Security check came, she had $1,100. All of a sudden, one day, she gets a wire for like $45,000. The next day, she takes out $22,000 in cash. No report, no nothing. Takes the $22,000 in cash down to the local Walmart, sends it to Egypt. The next day, she takes $21,000 out in cash. Again, the bank lets her do it. Not one question. By the way, where the hell did you get this dough? Down to the same Walmart, sends it to Egypt. The guy starts bitching at her that there's like $700 left. She takes the other $700 out. We interviewed her. Takes the other $700 out, goes down to Walmart. The Walmart says, you've been tagged. We can't send you any more for you. She gets in her car, drives 3 miles to the next Walmart, and they send it. Now, we're sitting there going, how the hell does that happen? How couldn't we have retrieved that money? It's like the next 2 days after it came out of the account. So we end up going to court. Well, of course, she didn't have any money, but we name Walmart. But, you know, so it's in federal court. Well, the minimum in federal court is $75,000. Now, the total amount stolen was $100,000. Now, Walmart comes in and says, our part was only $45,000, which doesn't meet the $75,000 requirement. And the judge goes, you're right. You guys are out of here. You're okay. He doesn't say, oh, but by the way, I'm letting the Secret Service know that you let this money out without any form filed, and the bank did the same thing. Nobody went after either one of those people. We're just out. We paid the guy. So how is it that I don't feel, I mean, if the chairman of Walmart was ever sitting next to me, I sure as hell wouldn't buy him a beer. I wouldn't shoot him, but I'm not happy with the guy that they get that kind of treatment. Can you imagine it was an insurance thing and they wouldn't pay for something with your kid? I mean, people think they can screw people all the time. And there's no redress for it. I'm saying murder is not part of the deal, but somewhere between murder and none, there needs to be something, Jen. And I don't know what the something is. Do you?
No. Well, I get what you're saying, and you know, this is, you know, the problem is, you know, throughout the system, you can substitute any number of people or entities for Brian Thompson, and it will stir up the same kind of resentment and horror and fury. And in this kind of an environment where people have never felt so powerless, probably in human history, except maybe, you know, maybe 1928 or 1929, where people have zero, you know, to fall back on, and they look around them and the media trumpets these things, you know, with great relish. It's not surprising that people are angry enough to do something like laying for somebody and shooting them. It's in some ways, it's maybe surprising it doesn't happen more often. But the fact that it happens is indicative of something that's really off the rails. And I just don't see any way around it. These people are always going to have this kind of cachet and attraction, you know, the wealthy and the powerful, and in spades compared to what they used to have, because they've got a bigger platform to brag about what they have, and they got more money than they've ever had before, and they got people on the other side who have never had less money. So this is a kind of cultural, you know, weakness we have now, where and you were saying before about putting all of the law enforcement resources imaginable into catching the guy who did this, because it is a high-profile case, and it's got other high-profile people.
God help you, if it was you or my brother and sister, or nobody cares.
Yeah, this doesn't help the situation either. It makes it look like, you know, these you know, criminals are somehow more worth catching than the person who killed somebody in the South Side nobody ever heard of, except the family members.
Well, that's the message they're giving people. I don't know if they're
going down well either.
You know what? What gets it even it more so, Jan, is that the people who do this stuff, and I've told enough of my own stories here today, but I could tell one more, but I won't. The people who screw you on the bureaucratic side, if they're actually correct, just doing their job, you really don't mind it because it is their job. It's sort of like if you get pulled over for something and maybe you didn't think you did, and you really get the feeling that the policeman is a dedicated person and is just doing his job. It's a lot different feeling than if you know he just enjoyed it.
Right.
And a lot of these bureaucrats, a lot of these people, when they screw people, I mean, when FINRA comes in here for an audit or something, just about everybody is really pretty professional and does it pretty right. But you just tell some people absolutely love it. And you just sit there and go, you know. But, you can't be taking these. But you and I know body language enough to know whether somebody's doing it because they have to or doing it because they enjoy it, right? I mean, some parents ground their kids because they can't stand doing it. They know they think they have to. Some parents maybe enjoy it. You know, that's a problem. Of course, why you want to ground your kid and have them with you if you didn't like them, I don't know. But that's another story. But you just wonder, what are we doing here? People are being... I don't think people have an idea of how much other people are being pushed around. I mean, the building here, they're gonna lay off the two girls, clean the offices, and tell the two guys that work during the day they got to clean the offices too. How the hell do you do two jobs when somebody's making $25 an hour? I mean, really? At the end of your day, you're going to clean 12 floors of office buildings? Offices? I mean, people have no... But the people who do that, they must love it, Jen. They must like doing it or something. I mean, you can lay people off because you feel you need to. You can also lay it off because you love doing it. Second person, I just never had a big thing for, did you?
No. Well, the fact is you can do something and you like doing it.
Yeah.
And are completely oblivious to any possible pain and suffering that this is causing is, you know, kind of a new low.
Well, sometimes, you know, you wish you were a concealed carry guy, and other times you're really happy you aren't.
I think mostly the latter, I hope. I
mean, yeah. Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, I'm probably one of the most easygoing dudes there is, but back in there somewhere is the Irish temper. I mean, it flares out like once every decade, but it's there. You know, I mean...
Well, you know, something that kind of mystified me in this whole, you know, UHC assassination is why didn't this guy have a phalanx of security that morning?
Well, why should you need it? He's just a regular guy.
But he's not really a regular guy. He's like a head of state. You know, this is what I don't understand. I can't believe that people who have that kind of, you know, organization behind them and that kind of personal money, assets, control, whatever, and that you wouldn't think that this person is somehow likely to be a target by somebody who's furious at having coverage denied or, you know, being bankrupted or something. I just don't understand how you would think this person can... I mean, the mayor of Chicago has a bodyguard. He's not a millionaire.
Yeah, well, the mayor of Chicago... I mean, Richard Daley had... When he used to come to the club, there was one guy in the car and one guy sat on the sofa by the pool, and he went in and worked out by himself with all the other people. Now, what's her name? Lori had a whole block, had people on her.
Oh, she had like 20 cop cars.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Daley Sr. had one cop car sitting in front of his house. Right. To what extent are you doing here? We're not... Everybody... Every chairman of every company doesn't need 15 people watching them.
But you know, when it comes to something like, you know, how many health insurance companies do we have anymore in this country with global, you know, tentacles all over the place? Not that many. And the ones that are left are humongous. You know, they're you know, they got more money than a lot of, you know, reasonably sized countries' GDPs. Why wouldn't they have some money devoted towards security?
Oh, don't say that, because at the board meeting today, they're going to be hiring millions of people.
Well, where does it end?
This, to me,
looks like some kind of design. I mean, I'm not saying it's a fake assassination yet. I don't have any reason to believe it's fake. But the way this guy was treated beforehand looks odd to me. And then, you know,
maybe there's a story, but Jen, here's my problem with it. Well, I got all kinds of problems with it. He's the CEO. Oh, geez, he needs a group of five to everywhere he goes now. He goes to the can, we got to send somebody in there with him. And you sit there going, wait a minute. Now he's protected. I'm the president. What about me? If they can't get to him, they're going to blast me. Oh, we'll give you five guys. And then all of a sudden I go, wait a minute. I'm the treasurer. If they can't get those two guys, I'm next. Where does it end?
Well, part of this is going to be, you know, like what we've seen happen with the Trump assassination attempt investigations, where there's clearly been some funny business, and that you got the DOJ stonewalling on producing stuff. So you have a Secret Service that is, you know, not really doing its job, and you probably got security companies that will or will not do their jobs, depending on who's paying what this month. And they'll look the other way for other security breaches that would make them leap into action in other times. The whole thing is a racket. The Homeland Security is a racket at that level, too.
The entire security of everybody in this country is... We don't have any with all the guns and everything out there. Why should some people have it, other people not?
Well, it's you know, we're being acculturated that everybody should have it, and everybody should be willing to pay for it for everybody else.
That's all I need is this guy's security detail going on my prescription drug bill.
You just wait, Tom.
Okay.
Hey, why don't we haven't had a break yet. Why don't we go to a quick break and then bring the boat of you guys back? Hi, Nance. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I hear you had a big birthday celebration. I had to hear about it because I wasn't invited.
I heard that you were invited.
No, I must have missed it. Maybe when I get home tonight, it'll be in the mailbox afterwards or something. Just saying. But you guys had a nice time at a French bistro. I like that.
It's very different.
Did you get enough to eat? Did you get enough to eat?
It was very nice.
The last time Audrey and I went to a French bistro, it cost an arm and a leg. These people paid, and I think we stopped at White Castle on the way home. Is that bad?
I think that's bad.
The ultimate bistro, though.
I go, Aud goes, are you hungry? And I go, I am. And I said, our bill was like $400 this guy just paid. She goes, I'm hungry, too. She goes, hey, there's a White Castle. I go, should I pull in? Absolutely. And we went.
Oh, my God.
How bad was that? Oh, man. That's my futures down 2, NASDAQ futures down 32. Now, if we'd had security, security wouldn't have let us do that, right, John? We'll be right back,
Stocks and Jocks. They would have went and got it for you.
Yeah, they would have got it for me. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities. They play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Net burn on the board. SP futures down 275. NASDAQ futures down 40. Nothing crazy going on here. NVIDIA's down 345. Tesla's back up, though. He must still be at Mar-a-Lago. Every day he's there, the stock goes up. We don't know what exactly they're giving him, but the investment public thinks they're giving him a lot. Dow futures are actually up 16, so that's not much going on there. We're in Europe. We've got the DAX down 9. Call that flat. FTSE up 45.5%. CAC around up 39.5%. So DAX is the only clunker there. The other guys are up. Bonds. 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.17. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.10. Japan actually came off its 107 high. It's down to 105. So they've come down a little bit on the interest rates there. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 69, 1.3%. Hong Kong up 548, almost 3%. China is promising more proactive stimulus measures, meaning more money in the system, I guess. Shanghai down a buck, call that flat, which is kind of weird there. Friday, Dow was down 129, but the S&P was up 15. NASDAQ was up 159. The big seven just keep going. Oil, 98 cents, but still 68.18. Mired in these high 60s. Once in a while, we pop over 70, we come right back. Brent up 91 cents, 72.03. Natural gas up 13, 321. I guess we're going to get cold again. RBOB up 2 cents, 193. Gold up $18, 26.77. Trying to make another run back at 2,700. We'll see if it does. Here's a big move in silver, though, up 78 cents, 250, 2.5%, to 32.37. Silver amazingly violent within the range. We'll see if it breaks out. Copper up 7 cents, 427. We have a lot of people here that are long silver, so I hope it does break out for them. FX, pound, or the euro is still at 105.7. The pound, however, has strengthened quite a bit. It's up to 127.8. It got down below 127. The pound has really been strong versus the euro, even more so than our currency. The yen up to 150.78, so the yen continues to weaken. Crypto down 908, 99,036 after it did go over 1,000. This is Bitcoin. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:37 a.m. on December 9th, 2024. Inbound on the I-90, it's 50 minutes from O'Hare to Jane Byrne. Outbound, 31 minutes. Weather in Chicago, currently it's 47 degrees at O'Hare and 49 at Midway. High of around 51 with cloudy skies. Down in Phoenix, 49 degrees, clear skies. Later in the day, high of 72 and sunny skies. In the NFL yesterday, week 14 of the 2024 season, yesterday saw another loss for the Bears, 38-13, their seventh straight loss this season. In the NBA, Bulls lost to the 76ers, 100-108. So I got Chief, over to you.
Nance?
Yes, sir.
I'm glad you didn't grab the short sword yesterday with your Bears.
No, I shut them off.
Shut them off at halftime? Could that be the worst half anybody's ever played?
I shut them off before halftime. I couldn't. It was so painful. It just was like, I'm done.
They had more sacks allowed than they had yards gained. Has that ever happened before?
I have no idea, but I'm glad I shut it off.
Well, they actually got a little better in the second half.
Usually they have been doing better in the second half, and I was going to turn it back on, and I thought, God, I just can't watch. I just can't do it.
Oh, God.
I love football, but when you watch what they were doing, it was so painful.
It is bad. Hey, I don't know if you were on earlier, but on Friday we were talking about this labor number, and your name popped into my head because you know more about people's personal stuff that you're never going to tell anybody about, but in general stuff. The employment numbers, and Jen and I kind of went through this already, it seems like there's less people working the household survey, but there's a boatload more jobs. That everybody, an awful lot of people now have two jobs. That would make up the difference between the two numbers. You've been telling us, you've been seeing that for years, that people have, in a family, pretty much if two people are trying to make ends meet, somebody's got a part-time gig, right?
Correct. That is correct.
Yeah. Is it getting worse?
When they take these surveys, I have no idea who they poll, but when they want to make it look bad, they make it look bad, and when they don't, they don't. But this has been going on for a long time, just to make ends meet, and I think this inflation is here to stay. I don't think when Trump gets in, they're going to lower any, you know, nothing's going to lower. The eggs aren't going to go down. The milk isn't going to go down.
Well, if you try and lower it, the risk you run is that you decrease asset prices, and to be perfectly blunt, well, I can't just say this about Trump. who's ever in the White House now is so beholden to people who own all the assets that they're never going to let that happen, to the extent that they can, till someday maybe it happens on its own where they can't control, and you got to be careful of that. But what is the normal, if there's such a thing, is the normal household family of four or five, what is, do you ever see anybody where just one person's working?
You know, there is a culture in this, there is a culture that I see where the people, one will work and then one will work part-time. But those, when you really get down to it, those people are getting some kind of financial aid from the government. So, and their belief is that, you know, having, being on Medicaid is the answer. Like, for example, if you work at, like, let's say Whole Foods offers health insurance, and I believe Whole Foods pays the people I've you know, worked with or mortgaged who work at, let's just say we pick Whole Foods because I had someone that worked there, and they say it's a nice work environment, it's a decent wage, it's not minimum wage, they give you a little bit more than that, and the people are happy working there. But then they'll say, well, I couldn't afford the healthcare prices they offered, so I quit and now I'm back on Medicaid. I mean, I don't understand that thinking. I just don't understand it.
Well, I don't see how you can you could go without any sort of the prices now are to the point where if you don't have insurance, you can't afford it. I mean, it used to be, you know, if you went to the doctor, or if you got three stitches, you just wrote them a check. Well, you can't do that anymore.
Correct.
I mean, what's insurance? I have no idea. I mean, I probably have a little bit of an idea. If you on yourself, Nance, went out and bought, or John, well, John might be old enough where it's covered. I don't know. I would never accuse him of that. But if I just went out tomorrow and wanted to buy an insurance policy on myself, what is it? It's got to be $2,000 a month.
Oh, yeah.
From what I understand, it's at least $1,800, $2,000 a month.
Okay,
and so that's the hard part about it. And people have to understand that. A lot of people tell me, "Well, it's the health insurance. It's the health insurance. It is, and it isn't. Because if you went out and got a job, even a part-time job, you could get some kind of insurance, right?" And if you go to the marketplace, which is Obamacare, if you make, I think it's $18,000. If you make under that, it will come up and say, please apply for Medicaid, right? So if you make more than that, they will, like, I had a hairdresser, they subsidized the payment. In other words, it was based on what she made, and it went down. So that's good. And there are things you can do, but it just seems that a lot of people just want something for free. In other words, they have it in their head that they're not going to pay for this. It doesn't necessarily have to be healthcare. It could be, you know, like a car. They get a car and then it gets repossessed. It's the thinking is just, I mean, you're never going to necessarily qualify for a mortgage with this thinking. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's what I have seen. And then you have other people that are, you know, two adults that are working full-time, and then someone else is taking on a part-time gig. Well, so kids can have their extra, whatever it is, play hockey, dance. These dance schools, I've seen bills for as high as $500-$700 a month.
Well, hockey is off the chart.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, it just I don't need to see those bills. I just need to see if your credit cards are too high. What's running them up?
Well, I mean, John, correct me here. I'm doing the dumb math in my head. But if somebody says, I'll pay you $20 an hour for 20 hours a week, all right, that's $1,600 a month. Now, if I'm on Medicaid, I don't know what you got to do to get on Medicaid, but if I'm on Medicaid, so if I go make the $1,600 and I turn around and buy myself a policy for $1,600, how the hell have I gained exactly?
Yeah, it's a Hobson's choice.
Yeah, I mean, how do I have much better sitting at home on Medicaid, maybe doing something for cash? Right?
Well, I don't know how to say this, but $1,600 a month, I don't think they would be able to apply for Medicaid at that point. I think they'd be over the threshold.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But what they could do is go to the marketplace and apply. And I don't think they realize this. Then it would be subsidized by the marketplace, so they could stay and just not use their health care insurance. But
any insurance with it, if you're at that low of a pay level, any insurance that has a deductible has to be way worse than Medicaid. Because what's the difference? For the first $2,000 that you don't have, you get a deductible.
Right. I understand. I understand the dilemma. To not have health care in this country is not it's not, I don't want to do two negatives, but it's not a great way to go. I don't understand why they can't come up with not a Medicaid, but saying, hey, look, if you're working, can you at least give us $200 or $100 towards the health? You know what I'm saying? Towards the health care, something reasonable.
Like, well, I mean, this is gonna sound sexist, but it can go either way. If you got a dude who's an electrician, a plumber, and I'll zing one of Jen, or an attorney, working for himself, if the wife, or if that's the person doing it, if the husband can go out and get a minimum wage job where they pay for the family's health insurance, they'll do that in a second. Why wouldn't you?
Because you have to go through this first phase. Okay, you have to go through this first phase where they are on Medicaid. And then they see how, you do not, that's the other thing that's sad, is you're not going to get the best of care because most doctors don't accept Medicaid.
Well, minimum wage is what, 15 an hour?
Minimum wage is 15 an hour.
All right, so that's 600 a week if you're working full time. I can still do a little bit of math. All right, so that's 2,400 hours a month. If they're going to pay for your family's health insurance, that's like you're making $50 an hour, for God's sake.
Tom, I agree with you, but yeah. they have to see that on their own. I actually have two clients that I've had for a long time, I mean like 5, 6, 7 years, and they exactly had that situation, and it was family of four was costing them $2,400 a month
with a deductible, probably.
And that's just $2,400 a month.
That's what I'm saying. But if somebody got sick, they're probably up to five on the deductible before they pay anything.
$10,000, dear, because something happened.
$10,000. Wow.
$10,000. Something happened. Something happened, and then they came back to me with this another money situation, and the solution finally was, they finally heard what I said, and the wife went out and got a part-time job, and now they're saying, I don't care what I make, I'm really working for the insurance, because that's a $2,400 bump in pay per month, and I can't remember what they're charging her, maybe $300, something like that. So maybe it's not quite, but then this $10,000 deductible's gone. So the deductible's much more reasonable.
Well, John, isn't it? That's a big deal for most attorneys working for themselves, right? The insurance. Oh, yeah.
It's the choice between some sort of living standard and no living standard at all.
The only difference you guys have is you can deduct it, where a regular salaried person can't.
Right.
Which is one of the most insane things there is. I mean, the first thing, how it's deductible for a corporation and not deductible for you, I mean, that's why all these companies got involved in the... Two things got them involved, the deductibility and the fact that insurance companies have a network and they pay different prices than we do.
Right.
Which, John, I'm sure you have a couple of questions for Nance. I haven't heard from you. What do you got?
Well, are you seeing any kind of appeal in your planet based Nancy for, you know, people sort of shooting the moon, going for more property than they reasonably would need, but they realize it's I have to do it now or I'll never be able to do it in my life. I'm just wondering where high-end properties are situated right now, because I think Chicago's experiencing the kind of maxing out of, you know, the appeal of these places. For a while, they were doing better than stuff at the lower end. Now I'm not so sure that that's happening. But you see people being, you know, aggressive in the way they go after something because they realize this may be the only time in my life where I can afford a house like this, so I'm going to have to pay more than I would otherwise like to, or I'll never get a shot at it again.
I can't say that I'm seeing that, John. I had one client that was like that, okay, and they did get their dream. They really did. And they were very happy, and they are now saying, we've got this big house. It's the cost is, you know, X, and it's just way too it's just way too much. Mm-hmm. And I understand what they're saying. I mean, it's not only is it a lot of work, a lot of upkeep, but the taxes are really getting. In other words, once you buy this property and you set a new value for it, when your 3 years is up and it gets reassessed, it's not in Cook County. It's the taxes went up, and how do you deny it's not worth it when you paid it?
Let me ask you to generalize people's math here. And I have a feeling I know what the answer is, but I don't want to lead you. If somebody were to sit down, say a house like Audrey's, which a lot of houses are now. You know, they're 20, 25, 30 years old. Nice places, you know, built very nice and blah, blah, blah. When people buy one of those places, or a townhome that's, you know, even 20 years old or something, everything looks nice, maybe it's even been updated. How many people have any concept of, even when they have the inspector come by, where they sit there and go, okay, the furnace is 15 years old, so let's say we luck out and it lasts another five. Or if you got 15 skylights because you like light coming in, which most people do, okay, those things are now 20 years old. They're going to start going kind of one by one. Does anybody have any idea price, like what a new skylight costs now? What a new furnace? I would have no guess that people are putting on roofs for 40, 50 grand. I thought a roof was $1,500, right, John? And then in the old bungalows. I mean, a furnace, you know, you could pay air conditioner, you could pay $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. They used to be two. I mean, does anybody have any clue? I don't. And I try and stay in the remodeling stuff just so I can talk about it on the show. As I go to the Home Depot every couple of weeks, I'm getting sticker shock. And I go all the time. And what is, I mean, if you didn't have a regular person that you used a lot, or say a plumber or electrician that you've known for years, if you just called somebody and said, come on over and fix this thing, what are you talking about? 4 hours to walk in the front door? I mean, just to look, I mean, does anybody have any idea of what these prices really are today?
No, they don't. No.
Because I was.
No, that doesn't even, that really doesn't, I really, for an average person, that doesn't even get discussed. I mean, I try to say, hey, look, you know, where are you gonna get the money for this? So if we know you have like $20,000 worth of repairs coming, right? Or then why don't we put less down and have this money sitting on the side for that? I try to help people that way. I don't think most people even get that far. They're just, you know, they just take it, put the information in, and then the loan could go through. I try to at least lead them to the right place so that they don't need to refinance when all these other things start coming up.
Well, Jan, you of course went around again. A conversation with some of the guys I once in a while have a adult beverage with. We're talking about the housing shortage, and one of the dudes, you know, these guys are in a distressed mortgage business. They know what they're talking about because we're short, you know, 2.5 million. You know, lower priced homes. And I said, okay, what exactly do you mean by that? Well, what do you mean? What I mean by that? Well, it's simple. I mean, what what's your math behind your utterance, basically? I'm not being nasty. I'm just saying, I'm going to say, John, that the entry-level bungalow that we lived in, when first one we bought in Evergreen Park that was 18 grand or something, to buy a piece of property, to put that thing up at today's prices, I'm not so sure you can do it for less than 2.25, can you?
No.
I mean, I don't...
Yeah, you could.
I mean, Nance, I mean, not to get personal, what would you say the absolute replacement value of your place is? It's going to be way more than you paid for it, or way more than the market value.
Oh, yeah, it is. That was another thing. When the insurance came through, I called and said, my house wouldn't even sell for this. What are you doing? And they said, they said, that's the replacement value. I said, of what? You don't have to buy the lot. Even if it burned to the ground, you wouldn't have to put in a new foundation, right?
Right.
That's not going to burn. And the lot is still here. And she said, no, she said, that's just what it is to replace the cost of your house. So the replacement value is more than what my house would sell for, by at least $150,000. It's crazy.
But people have this mystical idea that you can build low-income housing. Where? What's the thing going to look like? Is it not going to have a toilet?
Well, and here's the other thing. In these bigger homes, like, you know, John is talking about, they get, you know, it get after 10 years of being in some place, you know, it starts to look worn.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just... And it's just from wear and tear. It's just a normal thing. And so it's difficult to start replacing these things because, like I said, the replacement value is even higher yet. So that's why they're kind of going to this turnkey thing where, you know, it has to be, you know, how old is the roof? How old is the... look at a water heater. I mean, they used to be $140.
Yeah.
I remember that. And now they're almost $1,000.
Well, they wanted
crazy.
Whereas mine's more like a boiler in my building. It's like 75 gallons or something. The guys said, to get one in like this, it's like $3,000 or $4,000. You'd be kidding me.
Well, now they're going to tankless water heaters so you can just have water on demand. It's really something to see all the progress we've made in my lifetime, but it's expensive. I mean, I remember having to pull off the road and try and read the map, right?
Yeah.
Figure out which way was north, south, east, or west, and look at the sun, figure it out. And now people just take out their cell phones and, you know, put in the address and it tells them where to go. I mean, we had to stop and use payphones. Now you don't even see payphones anywhere.
They used to be a big that was one of the biggest, like the payphones at the train stations.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most politically competitive thing, to be the guy who got to put those payphones in there. He made so much money.
I believe it.
Because one of the reasons was, I don't know, maybe we're better off with the payphones. how is it that now that we have calculators, people can't add.
Right.
I was telling some story last week, Nance. I'll be very, very brief. This is like a few years ago. I think I told John when I first saw the article. It had to do with somebody who was at the Speaker of the House in like the late 50s, early 60s. He had something like 15 essentially middle-aged, for lack of a better term, almost like housewife people working for him with typewriters and mimeograph machines. I don't know if anybody even knows what a mimeograph machine is. And how they would, every year they would put out more bills than they do now. And now the guy's got like 100 people and he's got nothing in the computers. Like even though you have all this, I'll use the term help, you don't, maybe people are on a cell phone or sending emails to each other all day long. But the fact is, you're not any more, in a lot of places, you're not any more efficient, even though you ought to be.
Well, I think it's really ironic that you've got in competitive real estate bidding situations now, you know, a buyer who's willing to waive the requirement for an inspection just as a bargaining chip to get pushed to the front of the line to get the property because there's such a shortage of properties that they can afford, and they're willing to concede their right to an inspection. And you got, you know, so many things that could go wrong and such humongous expenses to perform that work. And you got people willing to just trade it away because there's another objective here. There's something really crazy about it.
Yeah, my family member just did that. We just did that. And
I see why people do it. I'm not bashing them.
No. I'm saying, though, but I mean, when I suggested that, they all looked at me like I had 13 heads, and I explained why. And I said, it's really the only way you're going to get it.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you, but it's that's just the way it is right now. And I personally went to see the home, and I said, I believe that this will not be an issue. And I explained that it doesn't mean you can't have an inspection, home inspection. It means that I really believe that this is truly the way to go, guys. And if you really want this, and it's a medical reason why we need this kind of a house, and you really need it, I believe this would be the way to go. And they did get the home.
Well, a lot of people are deciding that they want a ranch-style home. Nobody wants stairs.
Yeah, and this is a ranch. It's medically dictated that it has to be a ranch. And there's so few ranches on the market.
So how did that go, trying to explain something to your family?
I can tell you this. The past month of my life, I have talked to very few people because anything that would come out of my mouth would be negative.
Well, as my spinster aunt, who I love the best, used to say, just remember, you can't choose your family, you can choose your friends.
Yeah. No, it's you know what it is? It's a matter of people. It's a matter of educating people and then taking what they think and saying, I understand you believe that, but just listen to me, please. And then you've got to explain it from a different perspective. And you say, can you understand what I'm saying? And then they're like, oh, I see what you're saying. You know, they just have a whole different concept because they haven't bought anything in 40 years. So how would you understand it? It's so different.
Yeah, hey, we got a dash. Tomorrow, Carl's off skiing. And Lou sent us a whole bunch of stuff on this serious stuff. John, if you got 15 minutes or so tomorrow morning.
Oh,
I just want to read everybody this stuff. God, I sent it to you guys, I think.
Yeah.
You believe you can't, you need a scorecard to figure out who everybody is over there.
Yeah, it's only starting now, too,
yeah.
Really.
it's really something. I mean, all these borders, this wasn't Winston Churchill, T.S. Lawrence border, was it, after World War One? Some of them were.
Well, yeah, and I think Carl mentioned that, you know, the Balfour Declaration, which is 1917, it's before the Treaty of Versailles craziness, but it goes back, and the serious borders, just those, to look at those, and Iraq's borders too, are part of this, you know, crazy settlement that was made by somebody just taking a protractor or straight edge and drawing lines around on the map.
Do you have a border in the sand? I mean, I don't even know where you're at.
GPS wise, yes.
God, they did that before GPS. Nance, thank you very much. Maybe I'll get to see you this week. We had a nice time last week, and you guys went to the bistro. I like that. John, maybe I'll see you, eh? Are we gonna get together for this Irish game? We might have to.
My niece is trying to get, you know, jockey a position to get in the lottery for it, so I'm hoping.
Maybe we should get an Airbnb closer to South Bend and still not go to the game.
I want to go to the game. Can we get tickets?
Nance, I'll tell you what. I'll drive down if I get a parking pass. I'll drive down, I'll tailgate. You go to the game, and then we'll go to some bar and we'll pick you up after.
Okay.
You want to sit on a bench without a back for 4 hours watching 11 minutes of action?
When it's 20 that bar is looking better and better.
That bar is looking better and better. SP Futures down 2. NASDAQ Futures down 39. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Okay.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
That's all, folks.